From the newsroom of WBUR, I'm Darryl C. Murphy. Welcome to Consider This from Boston, where wheelchairs often break down and can take up to a month to repair. That means people with disabilities who use them to get around can be literally left stranded and at risk of health complications. WBUR Health and Science reporter Gabriella Emanuel has been following this story, and she is here to talk with us today. Gabriella, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Not too bad. So today we're talking about wheelchairs, and there's been a lot of breakdowns. What's going on here?
Well, it seems like everyone I talk to about these kind of twin issues, them breaking down and them taking a really long time to get repaired, everyone seems to point the finger at someone else. But let me tell you, there are basically two big reasons that breakdowns happen so frequently. The first is that there's no system for preventative maintenance on wheelchairs. So if you think about a car, you have oil changes. For a bike, there are tune-ups. For a wheelchair, you have nothing. A part has to break before Medicare pays to fix it. And what Medicare does really matters because private health insurers often adopt similar policies. The second issue with these frequent breakdowns is also a Medicare issue. They will only cover a wheelchair that is primarily used in the home. That means it's not designed to withstand the wear and tear of life.
That seems very narrow and almost to the point of being useless, right? Like, what do you think?
Yeah, it really is. And this dates back to the early 2000s when there was a proliferation of scammers, basically convincing people who didn't necessarily have mobility issues to get scooters and wheelchairs. And you can hear one of their ads.
Attention, Medicare and insurance beneficiaries. You may qualify for a power chair or scooter at little to no cost to you.
So there were actually about $1 billion in waste, and Medicare had to clamp down on things. And this is basically what they did. They made a much more narrow definition that you have to use it primarily in the home. And that ended up influencing the whole market.
Oh, wow. I remember that commercial, and I did not know that they were scamming.
Right.
So wheelchair users are mostly on their own for maintenance and repairs. But when they do get the repairs, it can take a long time, right? Like weeks or months. Why is that?
Yeah. So you can look at this issue from a lot of different angles. From the wheelchair user perspective, many of them point to warranties as the problem. And these warranties often require that you go to the original provider who you got it from. And there are very few providers out there, only a handful in Massachusetts, and some of them are known for very poor customer service. So wheelchair users kind of feel stuck and like they have no leverage in the situation. Because if you go elsewhere, say like even a bike shop, just to pump up your tires, you could void your warranty. Now, from the wheelchair provider perspective, there is no money to be made doing repairs. Often they actually lose money because they're not reimbursed well. One national study actually found that more than 50% of wheelchair providers say that half of the time they spend doing repairs is never compensated. These providers also blame health insurers who have put in place a lot of requirements before a repair can even start. One of the common requirements is that a doctor has to authorize the repair. I've heard of like longtime wheelchair users, someone who's been in a chair for decades, having to go get a doctor's note saying they need a wheelchair in order to get a repair process even started. Now, the next perspective, these health insurers tell me that they really need to review a repair request to make sure that it's appropriate, that it's cost effective. And sometimes they're stuck covering the cost of kind of shoddy manufacturing. So there are a lot of different issues here.
Yeah, so much. And at the end of the day, the person with the wheelchair is the one who's screwed over the most, I guess. You know, you introduced us to Pamela Daly, who broke her hip when the wheel fell off her wheelchair in the middle of the street in New York City. That sounds terrifying. Can you tell us more about her situation?
Sure. Yeah. So she's from Charlestown here in Boston, and she's been a wheelchair user since she was a teenager when she got in a car accident. And this particular incident that you mentioned happened a few years ago. She was on vacation in New York City, and the small front wheel on her chair fell off, and she fell and broke her hip, which she actually didn't even realize initially because she has no feeling in that part of her body. She told me that ultimately the broken wheelchair was actually worse than the broken hip because without her working wheelchair, she was stuck at her home in Charlestown. She missed work. She struggled to get to the hospital so doctors could look at her hip. And she says it took well over a month for the wheelchair repair to get approved by insurance. for that part to arrive, and then for the technician to come to her home. Here she is remembering when that technician visited.
And the guy opens the package in front of me, and it's the wrong part. And it always is the wrong part. Always. Always.
Oof, that's heartbreaking.
Yeah, she told me that every wheelchair user has a story like this. Another one of them is Ellen Lee, who lives in Arlington. Her brakes actually stopped working on her manual wheelchair back in April 2018, and it wasn't fixed until April 2021. Now, she had a power wheelchair that she could use as a backup, but it limited what she could do. So, for example, the manual chair could basically fold up and go in the back of a friend's car, like, so she could get to church. That's the example she gave me. But then when she had her power wheelchair, she either couldn't go to church or she ended up going with her broken chair. And she says it was really scary.
How did it take 3 years?
I know, right? She told me that even she was shocked when she realized how long it took. Like, she went back and added it all up. And it seemed like it was basically a bunch of logistics that all kind of went wrong. She needed to call the wheelchair provider initially, then they take a message and she has to wait for it to get called back. And then they need to check with her insurance to see what paperwork is required before the repair can start. Next, she has to go to her doctor to get permission. That's what we talked about before. Sometimes you need to go for an in-person visit. Once all that's done and it's approved, the technician has to come out to her apartment to take a look, see what the issue is. Then they order the part. They have to schedule another visit once the part arrives. And for Ellen, it just kept getting stuck in these places where she leaves a message and she never gets a call back. Or the doctor form sits in a stack of paper forever and then doesn't get filled out. So you kind of get the point. Here she is talking about the situation.
You know, it's just like, you know, you can get things overnight from Amazon, but you have to wait months to get a part for, you know, a simple part for a wheelchair. It just, there's got to be a better way.
And then, of course, that kind of months-long wait happens multiple times for each step in the process.
So these are two pretty extreme situations. How widespread is this problem?
It is remarkably widespread. Lynn Warbey is a professor at the University of Pittsburgh, and she's been tracking wheelchair breakdowns for years. Her research shows that about half of wheelchair users report their chairs breaking down in a typical 6-month period. Here she is.
If you sort of think about an analogy to a car, and your car, if 50% of people had their car break down in the 6-month period, they'd probably be pretty upset.
She also told me that about 28% of those breakdowns have a serious consequence. So that's like missing a doctor's appointment or missing school or work. And these serious breakdowns have been linked to more medical complications and an increased chance of hospitalization. Here is one pretty common example: pressure ulcers, or they're also called bed sores. These are painful sores that can sometimes even be fatal when they get infected. And often chairs are kind of custom designed to relieve pressure. But if your chair breaks down, you can be stuck at home, stuck in bed, or stuck in a chair that just doesn't fit well. And then you develop these sores. Your chance of developing a pressure ulcer almost doubles after a wheelchair breakdown. So wheelchairs break down a lot, so it's a common problem. But admittedly, a 3-year wait or broken hip is a pretty extreme example.
Okay. Now, what we are talking about, loss of time, loss of work, you know, medical complications. I can't say I'm totally surprised by this, but you also found that this impacts people of color and those with low income more frequently, right?
Yes, that's exactly right. Researchers have found that individuals who are from communities of color, low-income folks, and Medicaid users all have far more frequent breakdowns. And not just do they break down more often, they are more likely to face serious consequences when their chairs break down, and they are less likely to have a backup chair available when the kind of emergency does arise. So there are multiple things going into this. One is very basic that I keep hearing, is that if you live in an area where basically streets and sidewalks aren't as well kept up, then there are potholes, and that is a big contributor to wheelchairs breaking down. I ended up speaking with one gentleman, Morshid Buembo, who's a polio survivor. He's an asylum seeker from Uganda. He is on Mass Health, and he is actually on a type of plan that does not cover wheelchairs. So he's stuck using a secondhand wheelchair that doesn't fit him well. He says this often leads to secondary disabilities. He told me that he can't even count the number of times it's broken down. One of those recent times, he was at work at Home Depot and he got a flat tire, but nobody could fix it.
A police officer who's a friend of mine tried to take it at a gas station. Nothing could work.
It ended up costing $700 and he missed 3 days of work just trying to get it fixed. This was a big financial hit for him and he had to skimp on groceries for the rest of that month. And he even went without eating, all because of this flat tire. He made the point to me that people with disabilities are far less likely to be employed. And he thinks one reason for that is because you have to rely on a chair that is unreliable.
So what is being done about this problem?
Yeah, good question. Disability advocates say that Massachusetts has far fewer consumer protections for wheelchair users than many other states. So they are working to get the warranty laws changed such that kind of bringing over legislation that is in other states into Massachusetts. A bill that would do that is working its way through the legislature right now. But I should say the wheelchair industry has come out strongly against that bill, saying it doesn't provide workable solutions. So it remains to be seen what exactly happens there. Some say there are needs for grassroots change. There are efforts to teach wheelchair users how to do their own maintenance. There are ideas about starting kind of a AAA for wheelchairs. And then there are other people who say there needs to be kind of national systemic change. So changing the whole payment model such that wheelchair providers are incentivized to build really strong chairs, do preventive maintenance, and do timely repairs. But that would obviously take a huge change in our whole system. However, I have been told that because the baby boomers are aging and as they age, they need wheelchairs, that they won't stand for this. So the current state of affairs may not be around that long, hopefully at least.
Okay, so the baby boomers are going to have to step up eventually, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Well, thank you for stopping by. This was super informative and appreciate you taking the time. That's health and science reporter Gabriella Emanuel. Thanks for stopping by, Gabriella.
Thank you.
Before we go, I should tell you what else is going on. The American journalist killed in Ukraine over the weekend was a Nieman Fellow at Harvard. Brent Renaud was working on a documentary in a suburb of Kyiv. Steve Almond is a writer who taught Renaud when he was at the Nieman Foundation in 2018 and 19. He says Renaud played a critical role in telling stories of injustice.
We need desperately storytellers like Brent to make real what is happening in places like Ukraine, where there's just massive barbarism and suffering. But because they have that extra amount of courage, they are at risk of terrible things, even losing their lives. It's just a terrible irony.
Renaud was 50 years old. Also in Ukraine, the head of a Boston-based cybersecurity startup and some of his employees are finding refuge in a Ukrainian village near Poland. Andrei Bezverhi is supporting his workers in the war-torn country. He says he is heartened by the outpouring of support from people in Massachusetts.
When you see the people on the other side of the world, they know what is going on here. They support us. It does feel like people care and we're not alone in this. And that's very important to everybody here.
Bezverhi says he is still able to lead his company, SOC Prime, from the village. In Cambridge, masks are no longer required in indoor public spaces, but not everybody is eager to shed them. Ned Hinkle is the creative director of the Brattle Theater in Cambridge.
People have felt like we've gone out of our way to make the Brattle a safe space, and we want to continue to do that.
Face coverings in Cambridge schools are optional, but masks are still required inside other city buildings until the end of the month. And a little something for the football fans out there. After 40 days of retirement, Tom Brady has announced he plans to return to the NFL and will remain with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The 7-time Super Bowl champion announced his decision on Twitter, saying he has unfinished business. And that's all for today. From the newsroom of WBUR, I'm Daryl C. Murphy. Be good. talk to you tomorrow.